I have preached on the Transfiguration quite a number of times now. While a fantastic story, and one in which the preacher can move in many directions, it is interesting and also somewhat challenging in that the three synoptic Gospels, and those are the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, and Luke, have a different take on this singularly important event. While each Gospel readings takes a slightly different angle to the story, the Transfiguration... How's that? Is that working? That's okay. I'll try not to move much. While each of the Gospel readings takes a slightly different angle to the story, the Transfiguration is strongly believed to be...
I think you should just use that mic.
We'll use the other mic.
I think that it's not plugged in properly.
Thank you, Chris. We will get these things sorted. While each of the Gospel readings takes a slightly different angle to the story, the Transfiguration is strongly believed to be a part of the oral Christian tradition, and therefore preceding the written synoptic Gospels, which is a very long-winded and academic way of saying this story was of great significance to the early Christian church. So let's, for fun's sake, take a look at all three versions of the Gospels. In the Gospel of Mark, we hear a very traditional version of Transfiguration. That is to say, he emphasizes the messianic mystery of the event, and that means he stresses the glory of the risen Christ. He reaches back and incorporates the historical Jesus, and that is to say, the risen Jesus is one and the same person as the historical Jesus. Obviously, a very important point for the early church, and I would say even today. The Gospel of Mark also provides some sort of biblical humor in that the disciples look somewhat foolish and awkward and clumsy in their reaction as they see Jesus as God, but that in no way is meant to diminish the overwhelming importance of them seeing this glorious and magnificent vision of theirs. I often wonder myself, how would I react if I saw Jesus as God? The Lucan version of the Transfiguration emphasizes prayer. In his telling of the story, Luke says, Jesus went up the mountain to pray, and while he was praying, the Transfiguration takes place. There is also in Luke a very interesting kind of opposite parallel that happens later in the Garden of Gethsemane. In Gethsemane, the disciples, of course, fall asleep, missing Jesus talking to God. But in the Transfiguration, according to Luke, he says, now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory. In the Lucan version, it would seem the only ones who can perceive and understand the Transfiguration are those who awake and know how to pray. And I find it interesting that Luke would limit those who could actually see Jesus as God, but it was likely a product of the time it was written during the schism of the church, where those Christians in the Jewish synagogue would believe and those who would not. In Matthew, the version of the Transfiguration we just heard today, we get a very interesting and I would say effective introduction of Moses to the interpretation of the story. There are, in fact, a number of engaging parallels in Matthew between Jesus and Moses. For example, the Transfiguration takes place on a mountain as counterpart to Mount Sinai. Moses was born under the threat of the death by Pharaoh, and Jesus is threatened in the same way by Herod. Moses receives the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, and Jesus gives his, I would say, statement of God's law in the Sermon on the Mount. Moses interprets the law of God in Deuteronomy, and Jesus interprets the commands by referring to this and saying, "You have heard that it was said." Matthew employs the description of the bright cloud, summoning up the memory of the cloud that followed the Ark of the Covenant. He also describes the face of Jesus as it shone like the sun, as the same words were said of Moses after his encounter with God. The other parallels to Moses are three companions, the Trinity, the mountain, of course, the cloud on the mountain, and the reference to 6 days, that being of the Holy Week for Jesus, of the 6 days Moses waited on the mountain. Now, all this is to say, when Matthew tells the story of the Configuration, he uses the Moses motif to underline and underscore and give weight to the attention that Jesus is the Christ. All of the three Synoptic Gospels in Matthew, Matthew adds something very important and is the reason why I wrote this sermon today. So in effect, I had to say all of what I said to get to this point. The brilliance of Matthew's version of the Transfiguration lies in verse 6, where he parallels the terror and distress of the Israelites who hear the voice of God. To quote Exodus, "You," the Israelites talking to Moses, "you speak to us and we will listen, but do not let God to speak to us or we will die." The Israelites are overwhelmed by the glorious presence of the voice of God and they fear that they shall die. But in the Matthew version, the disciples, who are also overwhelmed and terrified by the vision that they see, Jesus reaches out his hand and while touching them says, "Do not be afraid." I want to tell you a little story from my time at VST, one that I vividly remember. There was a pastoral class that Professor Joan Wyatt was teaching, and Joan Wyatt happens to be the aunt of our wonderful Jill here. And she was teaching, and we were supposed to do a visit and then come back and discuss the visit and maybe even act out the visit to help us understand how pastoral visitation is done. My visit was to this elderly woman who was suffering from dementia, and she was very upset. I'm not exactly sure why. I'm pretty sure my presence wasn't helping, unfortunately, but she was very upset. And so when I came back to the class, we decided to act that out. So I became the woman, and I became very upset. And it was Joan showing how you might react to this. And I remember she asked, "May I touch you?" And I said, "Yes." And she put her hand on my forearm. And just that touch alone made all the difference. It made me much calmer. And she has this incredible voice as well, which is very spiritual and wonderful in a calming sort of way. And it's amazing how human touch can really alter someone's mood, someone's feeling. The human touch is so incredibly important. And this is the genius of Matthew's version, I think. God, who created all things, including the universe and the stars and the planets and all the living things, that God is so vast that not even heaven above could contain. This God was so full of grace and magnificence that he was willing to walk among us and reach out to us and touch us and relieve our terror and our fears. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is Emmanuel, which means Jesus is God with us. Please make no mistake, Matthew here is saying that the hand that is on the shoulder of the disciples is the hand of God. God is so beyond our understanding, so extraordinary, and at the same time comes to us when we are in terror or fear and tells us not to be afraid in the way of an ordinary touch. God, as John Calvin once suggested, makes herself small and lowers himself to be on our human level so that God communicate her love for us and that we can, in a very personal and intimate way, approach and touch God and know that we are loved beyond all measure. It is in this way that our God comes into the world, not just as a thundering cloud, not just as a voice that can shake mountains, but as a simple human hand that lays upon the shoulder and gently says, "Do not be afraid." God comes to us as though through small crevices of life in a gentle and mild way, and draws nearer and nearer to him so that we cannot be afraid. I remember one time when I was having a difficult moment. I went outside and it was evening, and it was one of those evenings where you can see the white clouds moving quite quickly because there's a wind obviously up in the sky. And I was looking up, and in that moment, I felt a strong connection with God, as though God was actually touching me and saying, "Do not be afraid." Yes, God, who made the universe and all that we know and the vastness of that which we do not know, uses that power and that might to come live among us and reach out to us and touch us, because the love of God for us is immeasurable. God is so large that she cannot be contained in the walls of a church. Surely that is true. God is so great that neither earth nor heaven could contain his glory. That is also true. And God is so majestic that God could surely never be contained in one crumb of bread or one sip of wine. We could probably all agree that that's true as well. And yet, it is also true that God loves us so much that he changes his dimension and form to become a crumb of bread and a sip of wine. And therein, the hand reaches out and says to us, "I created you. I love you. I am with you forever and always. Do not be afraid."